Pearl Church exists to express a sacred story and to extend a common table that animate life by love. A primary expression of our sacred story is the weekly sermon. If our sermons inspire you to ponder the sacred, to consider the mystery and love of God, and to live bountifully, would you consider supporting our work? You can donate easily and securely at our website, pearlchurch.org, or follow the link in the podcast notes. Thank you for partnering with us in expressing this sacred story.
Well, today, as is obvious, is Palm Sunday. This is one of my favorite Sundays of the year. If you have successfully made a cross, will you hold it up? I just want to marvel at your handiwork. Wow. People, all these people who can do things I can't do. It's amazing. If you have given your best effort, but you just have a squiggle, hold it up and just wave it proudly for the world to see. Right? Okay. Today is, with Palm Sunday, the beginning of Holy Week, the final week of Lent, and this is the pinnacle of our Christian calendar. During this week, we are journeying alongside Jesus, pondering the events of the days that lead up to the arrest, the crucifixion and the burial of Jesus, and the silent darkness of the tomb, and beyond all hope, the life of resurrection on Easter morning. Throughout this season of Lent, as we've been journeying toward this week, we've been exploring the life of Moses, and particularly bearing witness to his many disappointments, and likewise our own. Disappointment, our gnawing sorrow of unfulfilled hopes or expectations. Throughout this series, we have been paying attention through Moses' story to disappointments of abandonment, disappointment in our own inadequacy, disappointing outcomes, disappointing people, even our disappointment in God. Here's the thing, though. In all of these disappointments, there remains this shining sliver of hope that maybe we could get things back on track. I mean, yes, this experience of disappointment was bad, but we love a redemption arc, don't we? And we love a story of overcoming adversity, and we can make sense of our stories in this way. Yeah, that disappointment, that's part of my story, but in the long run, here's how it shaped me. Here's how it changed my vision of the world. Here's how it opened up an unexpected opportunity or taught me compassion and so forth. And that's good. It's really beautiful when that happens. We love a story like that. But what if our disappointment comes to us not as the middle, or not as a turning point in our story, but as its ending? Here we face what can be the hardest disappointment of them all, the disappointment that we feel when we meet our end. Part of the wisdom for me of following this church calendar that we cycle through together is that over the course of a year, we're going to be invited to hold all sorts of different parts of our experience, right? There's going to be seasons of wondering at God's creation, of delighting in restoration, of yearning for divine justice, celebrating community, recommitting ourselves to following the way of Jesus, and mourning our losses. But this week, Holy Week in particular, invites us to hold our ending. Because, as you might know, we are all going to die. Now, I know that's not what you came to church today to hear, right? You're all nice people, and this isn't something we talk about at polite dinner parties. Preparing for this week's sermon has felt a little bit like, did you see the Barbie movie? And there's this scene where, you know, they're in the midst of this nightly, joyous Barbie girls' night dance party, and it's this fabulous dance scene, and there's all these beautiful young Barbies and young Kens, and Barbie, our hero, with a huge smile on her face, says, "Do you guys ever think about death?" And everything just screeches to a halt. Today, I'm that Barbie. Right? It's a funny movement in the morning, in the movie, of course, because, you know, the answer is no, Barbie. We are all doing our best here to not think about death. Thank you. Can we get back to dancing? But here we are together in Holy Week. And like it or not, it is my job to talk with you all about the disappointment of our endings. And that's something the vast majority of us would rather not spend our Sunday doing. Thank you very much. Endings are hard for us. And not just the end of life, the end of anything, really. The ending of a friendship, the ending of a season, the ending of a marriage, the ending of a career, even the ending of a way of thinking, right? We struggle to let go. We struggle to acknowledge the changes. We struggle when we realize that we can't turn back the clock. I know that some of us here today are in circumstances where we have come face to face with death. And on top of our grief and our anxiety and our pain, this can be so isolating. I mean, when we come into seasons of endings, whether that's our ending or a loved one's ending, many of us can feel like we've passed into a kind of exile. We find ourselves in a place where we don't have language for our experience. And those around us who love us very much, they can't imagine. They can't enter. They can't go with us there. And we can't even really name what it is we're feeling because our culture has no good ways of acknowledging death as part of our human story. Because culturally, we do not acknowledge it. We do not. We live in a world where we worship at the altar of competence, success, control, youth, virility, power, right? We lace up our shoes and we go, just do it, right? We watch shows and movies full of beautiful young people who overcome all odds and achieve their dreams. For the most part, the voices and the faces that we give our respect and attention to are those that seem vibrant, full of life and purpose. And we turn our faces culturally together away from those whose stories are dwindling. Unlike many of the cultures throughout history and even in the world today, our culture does not create space for the wisdom of elders. Instead, we associate old age and illness with a diminishment of capacity. And by and large, our elders are treated as out of touch, moved out of our homes and into special communities where we young people don't listen and don't see and don't learn from the experience of those whose stories are approaching their end. I have to believe there's a kind of projection happening here. We feel such anxiety about our endings, this thing that we don't even know how to talk about. And so when we encounter someone whose story is coming to an end, we project our anxiety and our dis-ease onto them. And we don't want to face it. And yet, for all our efforts to hide from them, our story will include an ending. The modern mystic Richard Rohr includes in a very short list of essential wisdom for healthy living, this as his last point. You are going to die. Without holding this, he argues, we can't inhabit our lives fully. And so it seems to me very wise for us to take time, as much as we may not want to listen to these endings, to allow these endings to have a place in our self-awareness, and to let them shape how we understand ourselves, and to maybe even discover what gift these endings have for us all throughout our lives. I think we see this wisdom rising up in the story of Moses. Now, Moses' ending particularly can seem very disappointing, right? Moses, who had expended his life in liberating his people from slavery. Moses, who had given himself to forming this nation of former slaves into a community with religious and ethnic and ethical bonds holding them together. Moses, who had guided this unruly community through the wilderness for decades. Finally, they reached the border of the promised land where the people are going, and then he dies right there. In Deuteronomy 34, as we read today, the Lord said to him, "This is the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I've let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there." And then Moses, a servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab at the Lord's command. Now, on first glance, I think this can strike us as a very bad ending. I mean, imagine this is a movie, right? You've been following along with this hero all through the struggles, all through the journeys, as they've mightily worked to just get this people into the promised land. And then literally within sight of the goal, the hero dies. Roll credits. Right? Like, that's depressing. It reminds me of, I saw the second Pirates of the Caribbean film, right? And I didn't know it was going to be a trilogy. I had no idea. I just thought it was another movie. And it's getting toward the end of the movie, and I kept thinking, this can't be how this ends. You don't have a lot of time to wrap this up. Like, let's go. And then it just credits roll. And I was like, what? And then someone said, it's a trilogy. Okay. Traditionally, this death of Moses outside the land has been described as a kind of punishment from God because Moses made some mistake. Because that can't be how the story ends, right? That can't be a good story. But I wonder if we could actually see the story as containing a gift for Moses. See, if we reflect back on Moses' story as a whole, we find that Moses is constantly carrying too much, taking on too much responsibility for this people. One example, when the people are finally free and out of Egypt and they're in the wilderness, Moses tried to single-handedly deal with the needs of all of this people from morning to night, listening to their disagreements and issuing judgments and just exhausting himself until his father-in-law Jethro said to him, "What you are doing is not good. You are going to wear yourself out. You need to learn to delegate." Now, for a man who's burdened by his sense of responsibility to the people, might it not be a gift to be told, actually, this last leg, this isn't up to you. You don't have to carry this. You don't have to get the people there. And if you think about it, that means actually they were never yours to carry. This was never on your shoulders. It was never up to you. You are just a human. Let it go. This Moses was never yours to carry. As I've been thinking about this story, I wonder if this might not be actually Moses' own Exodus story. I mean, the people go from slavery in Egypt to freedom in the Promised Land, but Moses goes from the burden of carrying too much to the Exodus of letting it go, laying it down. And might it not be a gift to Moses to be released in obscurity away from the crowd? Might not Moses be coming home to just being a human at last? As I ponder Moses ending this way, I can't immediately help but see this as a gift for us as well. I mean, what if Roar is right, and it's essential for wise, good, vibrant living for all of us to acknowledge that our story will end? What if knowing that our stories, all of them, contain an ending is actually a gift that gives us back to ourselves, our lives as a gift instead of a burden? You see, I think like Moses, many of us are carrying our lives or some part of our lives as something that is up to us to control. We have to make this thing turn out well. Our career, our relationships, our loved ones, our faith, our health, the outcome of the story is ours. It's on our shoulders to carry, to make turn out right. And when that burden of our lives is resting on our shoulders, then time, aging, changes, all kinds of endings, they're all our enemy, right? They all have to be staved off. Anything that threatens our desired outcomes has to be pushed away, denied, or overcome. Here's the thing, your work, your relationships, your loved ones, your passions, your dreams, your very life cannot ultimately in the end be yours to carry. Because sooner or later, we are all going to have to put whatever we are carrying down. What I think Moses is invited to see as he stands on that mountaintop overlooking the promised land is that the people were never his to carry, because the people were always God's. Could it be that we are being invited to discover the same thing about our own lives? I mean, that relationship You can't secure it forever. Ultimately, it's God's. That person, you can't be responsible for them forever. Ultimately, they have to be God's. That dream, that passion, that hope you're harboring, eventually it will have to be handed over and released. And your very life at some point will not be within your control. And that can be terrifying. It can paralyze us. It can cause us to cling tighter in anxiety. It can cause us to sink into grief. And all of those responses are okay. They're okay. All of that belongs. It's very human. But right alongside those normal fears and anxieties and griefs, maybe the knowledge of our endings can release us, can stop us in the middle of our attempts to control, to manage, to carry everything. It can make us pause and realize that what we're trying to carry is never ours to carry. It's never ours to shoulder. I mean, what if we took a look at our loved ones and took a deep breath and said, I am so glad that I get to give what I have now for their good, and in the end, their well-being is not mine to carry. Or what if we looked at our work and said, I'm so glad to be able to contribute something that gives good in the world, and I also know that someday this is going to pass into someone else's hands, and it's going to go beyond me. And what if we looked at our very selves and said, I can treat my life with kindness, and I can seek to grow, and at the end of the day, I belong to divine love more than I belong to myself. I think this wisdom is what we see pervading the last week of Jesus' life. In this Holy Week, we are witnesses as Jesus, eyes wide open, walks into a situation that leads to his death. And we watch again and again as Jesus responds with a calm, non-anxious acceptance. In his arrest, in his trial before the religious leaders of the community, in his encounter with Pilate, we are startled as Jesus declines to defend himself, to argue, to attempt to regain control. When Pilate asks Jesus, "What have you done?" Jesus answers, "My kingdom doesn't belong to this world. If my kingdom belonged to this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." I mean, this is odd, right? You would expect a young, radical, religious leader who's attempting to bring about a new way of life in the world to feel the weight of that movement, right? To feel responsible, to just make sure the whole thing succeeds, to ensure the right outcomes. But Jesus seems so clear throughout his whole ministry that this whole thing is not on his shoulders. The kingdom that Jesus is aiming to bring about doesn't depend on him. It belongs to his Abba, to his Father, to his God. So even while Jesus devotes his whole person to proclaiming the goodness of the kingdom of God, in the end, Jesus is able to resist the temptation to grab control, to manipulate, or to use violence. He is able to remain to the end just human. Once in a class with my mentor, Dallas Willard, who I had the pleasure of being in some classes with before he passed, Dallas was asked by someone, "How would you describe Jesus?" And without a pause, Dallas responded, "Jesus was relaxed." Jesus was relaxed, which made everyone stop because that's not the answer any of us expected. Jesus was relaxed. This, I think, is the gift that comes to us when we live in the wisdom of our endings, because this whole thing, this whole project that we're up to, it's not in the end up to us. In the end, all our life and our love and our projects must be released into the hands of divine love. So why not begin releasing now? Why not take a deep breath? Why not relax? We have so much in the atmosphere of our lives together that makes it difficult for us to embrace the ending of our stories. But there's this ancient wisdom calling to us to hold our entire story, beginning to end, and see the whole thing as a gift. to see the whole thing as belonging to God, and to slowly release the pressure of holding everything on our own. The ancients called this memento mori, the remembrance of death. And they believed that this way would help us live more fully and more deeply in the present. So perhaps when we're in distress, when we begin feeling just the weight of our whole lives crushing down on our shoulders, maybe there's an invitation to pray with the psalmist, "Lord, let me know my end, and what is the measure of my days? Let me know how fleeting life is. You have made my days a few handbreadths, and my lifetime is as nothing in your sight." And then, like Moses, like the psalmist, like Jesus, perhaps our greatest wisdom is then to gather up the whole stretch of our lives, that mere breath, those few handbreadths, and see it all held by divine love. And now, O Lord, what do I wait for? My hope is in you. These stories that we're telling with our lives, these things we care so deeply about, these people we love so fiercely, the outcomes we hope for so fervently, they're ours. They're ours for a little while. And that's good. It's beautiful. We're grateful. And it is also good to recall that in the end, we are invited to let go. And that might not be a curse. It might actually be a gift. It might be the invitation to begin to relax today, to let go a little bit, and to remember that already, right now, you belong to divine love, to the God who is already holding your whole story. Let's pray. God, as we consider our endings, as we hold how fleeting life is, may you help us to see the whole thing as a gift and to wait in hope for you.
We hope that this sermon inspired you to ponder the sacred, to consider the mystery and love of God, and to live bountifully. If you don't already support our work, will you begin today? You can donate easily and securely at our website, pearlchurch.org, or follow the link in the podcast notes. Thank you for partnering with us in expressing this sacred story.